In April, join the wheelbarrow full of dicks as we bid farewell to another co-host. Before then, though, let us all share in a great moment in drunk history.
I was on the old Yahoo Messenger, met this bitch in the chat room, chatted her up.
What did you guys talk about? You talked about your lives?
Sure, I don't know.
And how did you arrange the meeting? You were like, hey, babe, we should meet up sometime.
Yeah, I think she was the one that... I don't remember. It was a long time ago. But yeah,
so then you met.
Yeah, she was kind of emo.
Emo? She kind of dressed in goth?
No, I didn't know. Hell no. That's not me.
No, is that... what was she wearing?
I don't know, jeans and a t-shirt.
And you pick her up at her house?
Yeah.
And did you guys go on, like, a date? You took her somewhere?
No, just pretty much started smashing right there.
So you knocked on her door?
No, she was outside waiting for me by the mailbox.
She was out waiting by the mailbox?
So you smashed her by her mailbox.
Did she invite you inside?
No.
Were her parents home?
Yes.
Where did you go?
Just right down the street to some abandoned house.
You fucked her in an abandoned house? See, this is an interesting
story. Right, exactly. That's what I'm saying. It's a better story.
Fucking just brought in an abandoned house.
Well, it's a... I won't say abandoned. It's a unbuilt house. A project, if you will.
Welcome to the Wheelbarrow Full of Dicks internet radio program. I am Mike. I am joined by my co-hosts Napier and via Skype, Mr. Travis Hulse.
Cotton Eye Joe.
To contact the show, 309-740-1430 or WFO Dicks on Skype. We have a wonderful show for you this evening. We will be joined in just a few moments by comedian Todd Glass.
It's a historic day, I think, Mike.
An historic day?
An historic, yeah, right?
Somebody who's actually been on the moving picture box actually decided to come by this place.
That's the moving picture box, he's on the... He's everywhere. The guy, live shows, it's amazing.
And he has a good amount of comedy albums.
I am absolutely sure that Mr. Glass will consider this among his career highlights.
I have a feeling you're wrong.
One day, Todd Glass will say, look, I've lived a long life, done a lot of things. I knocked a lot of things off my bucket list. But I will never forget the time I was on the Wheelbarrow Full of Dicks internet radio program.
He's senile at this point, right? Like, he doesn't know everything else that's happened. He can only remember this one thing that he did one time.
I'm just really excited tomorrow to go, like, right away tomorrow morning to jump on his Wikipedia page to see if it's referenced.
Can you add to it?
Yeah,
we could add to it.
Like, just throw out, like, a tidbit of information that he gave us and said on this show. We should have a Why do we not have a Wikipedia page, Travis?
Because we're not important, Mike.
Anybody can do it, right?
Anybody can make one. You just throw it on there and edit it whenever you feel like it.
Napier. Is it poor form to make your own Wikipedia page?
Kinda.
Let's ask J Square to do it.
Okay, we'll ask J. We'll get Jay to do ours, and then we'll do the Furnacasts, and that way we didn't do our own, and so it's not tacky.
Yeah, it's perfect. Like horn tooting. You can't be horn tooting yourself.
Yeah, and we're not tooting our own horn. We're tooting our friend's horn.
Yeah, that's kind of hot.
We're gonna have to disinfect that mouthpiece after we're done.
No, I like it wet.
Guys, I have so much to talk about, and we have this interview. I don't even know where to begin, but...
Well, we probably should get to it, then.
Well, Travis, first of all, I wanted to say that Jay Adson threw out a doozy of a flat drunk submission. To submit your flat drunks, you download the flat drunks from the website or the Facebook or wherever you can. You print out the flat drunks, you put the flat drunk somewhere special. Our buddy Jay Adson printed out a flat drunk and took a picture of Andrew WK holding it.
He knocked it out of the park. Unbelievable.
Yeah. He met Andrew WK at some record store, gave Andrew WK a flat drunk, and said, hey, take a picture of this flat drunk. And then he gave the dude another flat drunk. So, I mean, that's going to be tough to beat.
I don't think anybody's going to beat that one.
Isn't the prize up for grabs this time the Napier Sweaty Greasy Box or something? Isn't that what we were calling it?
I think it is, because I think the other one that was grabbed was, I think Drunk said he was going to do a 4th of July box, the Freedom Box.
Well, as you may have heard at the beginning of the show...
Can I call it the Napier Greasy Slop Box?
Well, you think about it for a while. As
I don't like thinking.
Was mentioned at the beginning of the show, Drunk might be leaving us. And he said that he's leaving for 5 months. That's what he said. But, I mean, we've heard this story so many times before, Napier. People say they're just going to leave for a while to do something, and then they never come back. So this is probably... We're going to do it right this time. I mean, the other times, our co-host just left and said they were coming back, and they didn't. But I think that at this point, Drunk deserves a fitting farewell, don't you think, Travis?
I think
so. We need to do it right. We can't just, like... Eh.
It's going to be like... We'll have to do, like, a weekly in memoriam to some of his best bits... Some of the classic drunkerisms, you know what I mean? And then
right.
Play some just great music. And just give him the pat on the back that he deserves.
I mean, the Drunk Pitbull song, we got to get that in there 1 week. We're gonna send Drunk off right, just in case Drunk never comes back. Maybe his last time on the show, we'll put stuff in his mouth again. I know we just did it, but...
Why not?
I mean... I feel like before he goes, we need to put some more stuff in his mouth.
We're going to have to do a Napier sexy story time to get some of his, you know,
right.
Best impressions. It's going to, yeah, we're going to have to do all the classic drunk
right.
stuff.
We just got to do it right. But what I really want to talk about before we get to Todd Glass is, and I learned about this on his show, is Garth Brooks joined Facebook.
Oh, swoon.
Okay.
And... For an hour and a half on the Todd Glass show, they played this video that Garth Brooks posted on his Facebook and just shit on it. And it was the funniest fucking thing. And they're absolutely right. It's very douchey. So I'm going to play it for you, Napier, and I want your reaction. And then we're going to talk to Todd about it a little bit when he comes on. But I want you to hear this, and I just want...
Can you give me some context of why did he put this on there?
Before you listen to this, you have to imagine the fakest, most insincere smile on the guy's face. Like, he's trying to pretend so much that he's very excited about what he's about to say to you.
Are you ready? I want you to... this is Garth Brooks' first post on his official Facebook page.
Don't worry, my tits have been calmed.
Well, I guess it's official. We're now on Facebook. I really wasn't sure about this at the start. But then a friend of mine said something that just made all kinds of sense. She said, think of it more as a conversation. I like that. But I'm already finding out on my own. So
you look
it's wiping
concerned.
The walls out between you and me, and I really like that. It allows us into each other's worlds, or I guess in my case, the hotel room.
Do you want me to keep going, or do you have thoughts?
One of my thoughts is, fuck you!
Okay, I'm going to keep going.
When I think about things I want to post cool stuff, slick stuff, neat stuff. But most of the stuff I'm going to post is going to be raw stuff like this. This is just who I am.
Fuck you!
So if this is truly
fuck you, you cocksucker!
When I say
you dick-smooching little shithead! You goddamn shit-peddling con artist fuck! He sounds like he's trying to fuck me!
Now... And this is the point that I have on this.
Okay.
Look, you listen to that, and there's no way you can't think, oh, God, this guy's a complete tool. But you have to take into consideration that Garth Brooks has sold more albums than any solo artist of all time. Of all time. Elvis, everybody.
Well,
Garth Brooks is the top-selling artist of all time. Now... If you take that into consideration, now he knows that. He knows a lot of people really, really like him and really are into his music, and he means a lot to people. Now, that gets in your head, right? And you got to think, God, every time somebody encounters me, they're encountering the highest selling musician of all time.
And not only that, they're encountering whatever feeling that they, whatever personal feelings that they might have towards his music and towards that guy.
And so, I mean, like, that would get up in your head and make you think, fuck, man, I gotta nail this because this means something to people because I'm fucking Garth Brooks, right?
No.
No?
No, fuck Garth Brooks. He's speaking to the little camera as if he's never seen a functioning computer before. he doesn't know what Facebook is. He doesn't know what Twitter is. He's come out of a fucking rock.
He's so far removed from like current day society that he's like just baffled by what he's doing.
He's introducing himself to Facebook in a way that is would be appropriate 5 fucking years ago,
right?
If not longer.
It's crazy that he didn't already have a Facebook. I mean, like, how can you not have a Facebook fan page in 2015? I mean, how can you not even? How are you just now getting to that, Garth?
It's not like he had to manage it. Like, he could have had one of his people like take care of the Facebook page. And who is the genius on his team that decided that now is finally the time for Garth Brooks to grace Facebook with his presence?
You know, Mike,
it's like somebody came to him and said, Garth, how about Facebook, man? That's something that's an avenue we haven't explored yet. And he goes, fuck, I never even thought of that.
You know what happened? Somebody just randomly said to like his management, is like, you know, I was on Facebook the other day and I just tried to look up Garth's page and I don't know, is there something wrong with it? Did you remove it? And they're like, oh, I knew we forgot something.
You know, Mike, this video would make way more sense, probably be a little more sincere if this were 1997. Also in 1997, Garth Brooks was relevant. Just pointing that out.
He retired for a while.
Good.
But guys, we're gonna go ahead and get into the Todd Glass interview. We'll talk to you in a minute. Here's some current Garth Brooks music when he was Chris Gaines. Remember Chris Gaines?
No.
With the soul patch.
We should talk to Todd about that.
Radio FUBAR. Radio f***ed up beyond all recognition.
Welcome back to the Wheelbarrow Full of Dicks internet radio program live on RadioFubar.com. Our guest tonight is veteran stand-up comedian Todd Glass. His memoir, The Todd Glass Situation, is in stores now, and his podcast, The Todd Glass Show, is available wherever you get podcasts.
How you doing?
Good. How you doing?
Good.
We started this whole thing off in like a big ball of confusion. Well, I think we made it confusing because Mike was emailing you and giving you my contact information, and I was calling you like a day or so late and getting voicemails and leaving it. And that was all probably fairly confusing, but what was the most confusing to me is that you actually agreed to do the show.
Yeah, why are you so nice to us, Todd? What's going on?
Well, you know, the funny thing, no, when you're... I'm at a podium right now, so I hope that's the way you like to imagine me doing this interview.
I do. Give us your State of the Union.
No, you know what? When you're trying to get things, there's always, you know, I'm trying to get things from other people sometimes, and you're just shocked when somebody says yes, so you try to turn it around and do it for somebody else. Because I've had, you know, things in my career where I've asked and somebody said yeah, and I was like, fuck, I can't believe they said yes. And then, so you try to turn it around and do it for someone else.
You're a good man, Todd Glass.
Yeah, thank you.
Well,
you know, I like talking about the book, so it's good for me too. I'm not going to, you know, make it.
That's perfect, because I was actually going to reference that, because not only are you a very well-known comedian, but now also as of last year, correct? Like last summer, I believe you released the book?
I think it was June or July of past June or July.
Now, I'm sure you've probably explained this a bunch of times, but the title of the book is The Todd Glass Situation, A Bunch of Lies About My Personal Life and a bunch of True Stories About My 30-Year Career in Stand-Up Comedy. Now, did you research that to see if you could get into the Guinness World Record book to
get the longest
title?
I know, it's so... Well, at least the title is really... The Todd Glass Situation. That's really the title.
Just a subtitle.
Yeah, the subtitles can be long, Simon and Schuster said, but the original, the title is The Todd Glass Situation. But, you know, the original title I wanted is, and Simon and Schuster, they were great. The whole experience was great. I didn't get the name I wanted. I'll never know if I was right or wrong, but I'll tell you the name. You can tell me if you can guess what it was about without knowing. So,
okay.
And I'll give you the subtitle in this one too. And there's a lot of prefacing here. I don't know why. It's not like it's a wrong word, but you know, when they go like, someone's in the closet, everyone knows what that means. So,
sure.
I don't think that's a bad title or anything. It's not like I'm telling people they should stop saying it, but it's just, I don't like it. It's just so, you know, whatever. But I said to them, if you let me call it this, I don't even mind if that's in the subtitle. So here it was. So this would have been the name. Then you tell me if you saw it on the shelf, if you had to, could you figure it out? If not, that's okay too. It was going to be called All I Ever Wanted to Do Was Meet a Girl with a Terminal Disease. And the subtitle would have been And Other Stupid Things I Said and Did to Keep the Closet Door Shut.
I think I could have figured it out.
What that has to do with the story in the book. Tell me if you could figure that out.
I think I
yeah, I mean, I get it.
Well, what do you think it was? What do you think that meant? Like, what does that mean?
You would have liked to have had a fake or maybe a short-term lady that you could discuss
you
with
you
people. Yeah.
Exactly.
You do like an Anna Nicole Smith.
Right, Anna Nicole.
Somebody that was like, and you know, you don't think it through because if it's not, actually the original title I wanted was All I Ever Wanted to Do, because this is the true story, was all I ever wanted to do was meet a nice girl with cancer and other stupid things I said and did to keep the closet door shut, because I thought, you don't think it through. It has nothing to do with being offensive to people with cancer. Matter of fact, when I was paranoid about that, I asked my friend's mom who was going through cancer, who's doing awesome now, I said, you get that? She goes, yes, that has nothing to do with anybody with cancer. It has to do with an 18-year-old kid having a not well-thought-out plan. I'll meet a girl, she'll have cancer, then when she dies, I could tell people when I'm 70, I never got over Karen. You know?
It's my one true love.
Never got over her. So that was the name, and I thought it was just a little grabbier, you know, a little catches people's eye a little more, but we went with the Todd Glass situation because that was what I used to call what I was. I would go, like, if I had a friend that knew, and let's say somebody was coming in town, like an old friend, and I would be like, oh, by the way, they don't know about my situation. And my friend Daniel Kino once goes, oh, is that what you call it, a situation?
Todd, I'm going to bum you out, but I think I like your original title better. I like the one you didn't use.
Well, you're right.
It's a better title.
I think it's a better title, and I really did think, I thought, you know, when I hoped to get on Howard Stern, I thought that's a book title that would end up in front of somebody. It's like, whoa, what is that about? What, you know, even if, and by the way, even if they couldn't guess what it was, even if there was no subtitle, I think it might even have been better. It's like, whoa, what's this about? And then it makes people read, maybe, and go, oh, okay, okay.
That Simon and Schuster doesn't know shit about selling books.
You know, you know, the truth is, Schuster was great, but Simon, a real stick up his ass.
They're always button heads, those two.
But you know, it was still an unbelievable experience from start to finish with them. It's like the way you want things to go, whether you're working on a show or doing music, you want to create the people that have the money and that have really control to be as, they were awesome. I mean, they were just unbelievable. So on that one, but you know what? They were so awesome. But my brother said something funny. He goes, yeah, you always tell everybody how awesome they were, and they were, but for some reason you like to bring that up every interview you do about the date.
The one fight that you had with them?
Yeah, it wasn't even a fight. It was just a creative. We went back and forth, and then I changed it. What about if I said, instead of cancer, all I ever wanted to do was meet a nice girl with a terminal disease? They were like, God, that's not that much different. I'm like, okay.
The same concept. We're trying to stay away from that.
But yes, a good, a great experience from start to finish.
It's always nice if you can work with people, like you said, the money people that understand that really all you have to do is let creative people be creative and just kind of let them go.
Well, I think what happens a lot is they think they can fix something if it's broke, or they can, you know, well, first of all, there are good executives. I mean, notoriously, I think HBO was the first group to come along, and the word on HBO, anybody that ever worked with them, was they let the talent breathe.
Sure.
So now with all the, you know, with everything going on, there's so many outlets that a lot of things get to breathe.
They saw that HBO was kind of running away with it. It seemed like not every Emmy nomination went to HBO, and so everybody said, maybe they know what they're doing.
Yeah, I think so. But it still happens all the time. But it's part of the game. You know, you're working on a show. They all like to give their notes. But,
well, I think that's how we end up with shows like the upcoming one starring, what's the gal's name from Happy Endings, where the two friends decide that they're going to have a baby, but they're platonic friends. And then he meets the love of his life. So then they all have to live together to raise the baby.
I don't think I want to watch show at all.
Those shows end up, they have their audience, but yeah, I sort of, it's not right to prejudge it before I see it. But
of course not.
I smelled that and I was like, doesn't smell good.
It reminds me of a time when there was like a glutton of like those shows on television where I was like, it has to have a wacky premise. It can't just be, hey, here's this funny guy that you know, he's going to do some funny stuff and you'll probably laugh.
Yeah, you know, like if Eddie Pepitone had a show where he owned a grocery store, it'd be hilarious.
Yep, no more things need to be stuck in there. Just Eddie Pepitone at a grocery store.
Eddie Pepitone owns a car dealership. Eddie Pepitone deals with his neighbors. Anything he did would be great. I could manage it. I meant it all the time.
He's just shouting at the customers how fresh the tomatoes are.
Yes. Just talk shit about all the things they check out with.
Actually, that's a funny idea for Eddie for a show. Every week, it's Eddie at a different job.
That so is a funny. Good idea. You could probably get that on like True TV or something.
Yeah, you know, like different. It's like different. You know, every week it's just Eddie, whatever job he had, how he would deal with every. You know, with whatever.
It's like Dirty Jobs. Dirty Jobs only
doing them.
Yeah, like complains about them.
I would like to envision it more as that old show, The Surreal Life, with like Paris Hilton and Nicole Richie, where they're doing things that are completely out of their wheelhouse.
Well, I didn't picture it a reality. I pictured it more like it's still not real. Like,
you still wanted a single camera.
Yeah, it's not a real show like where he's really dealing with people.
So he's a character, and at the end of every show, he gets fired, and then the start of next show, he gets another job. There you go.
I think we just workshopped an Emmy Award-winning show for next season.
I think you're right.
Now, is that mine or yours?
I think if you mine. Just, it's obviously yours. You put right. your name on it, it's going
to
sell.
No,
a lot
we work together.
If,
don't well, give just, it to him.
No.
If we could get just a piece of it, you know
this
what
is
I mean?
This is our foot in the door, Travis.
Producing credit is all I need.
Craft services. You yeah. guys can do craft services.
All right. So I was thinking about the other day, well, just a couple of days ago. It's nice to talk to a funny guy, you know, who at an early age wanted to be a funny guy. And make that a career, right? I was just thinking about the days of the prank phone call being over and how that's a real bummer because I feel like that is a really early gateway into some sort of comedy, even though it's kind of a, you know, basic comedy.
I think the prank phone call still exists. You just can't record it and play it anymore.
Well, you can't. Can you make a prank phone call, though, with caller ID and cell phones?
You could star, you could, but you're right. The bulk of prank phone calls is over because the number shows up. But there's still people with landlines, I guess, and you could hide your number and call people, I guess. But the best prank phone calls were, I don't think anyone ever did it as good as the Jerky Boys. They just had it down pat.
Is that when the prank phone call probably jumped? No, they had crank anchors for that, and they were kind of decent, but...
Yeah, no, there have been prank phone calls forever.
I just remember some of my earliest memories of laughing hysterically with my friends were hearing my stepfather tell me stories about how we used to prank phone call people, and, you know, he'd give me the setups, the Prince Albert in the can, the Oliver clothes off, those kind of things. And it's, you know, immediately after they left the house then and left our buddy, me and my buddy to our own desires, we would, you know, automatically jump on that push button corded phone and make those phone calls.
Oh, me and my brother, I don't know why we thought this was funny, but me and my brother found my dad's yearbook. So we decided to call like businesses that advertised in the back and see if they were interested. And some of them did, like, you know, years later, it was a clothing store that was open, a hardware store. And I forget what we said, but we would be like, say, do you remember Paul Gess? Well, he's our dad. I think I remember what we said, but I think as I'm an adult now and realize I'm embarrassed to say.
So you even referenced your father in these prank phone calls that you made to businesses, local businesses.
Oh, yeah. Well, it was in another. It was so many, like, townships away, like, you know, like we lived in the suburbs of Valley Forge, and this was all like, you know, in the set. Who knows? Like, we were young kids. I would imagine. Well, we didn't disguise that we were young kids. We tried to work that into it. Like, we said something. He doesn't feed us or something.
We could really use a hot bath.
Keep in mind, we were very young. I mean, I tops. I could have been maybe 30. So, you know, I didn't know any about this. I'm kidding, obviously, for your one dumb listener. 30? That's very mature.
I can't believe you were still making those phone calls, Todd.
Yeah.
I've become kind of a regular listener of your podcast. I listen to it at work. I enjoy it a lot. And you guys introduced me to the Garth Brooks Facebook video. And I've been holding off talking about it because I knew that we were planning on having you on, and I loved the Garth Brooks Facebook video so much, and
well, you know, go ahead.
Well, you were very passionate about it, and so I thought that you'd be a good person to have this discussion with.
It's amazing. It's almost like where I feel sad. Like, is he that delusional? Well, because it's not just it's almost sad.
But what I was thinking was, I mean, like. You don't really think about it, but Garth Brooks has sold more albums than Elvis. He sold 135 million albums. And that has to, like hit you in the head and make you think, oh my God, everyone who encounters me knows who I am I've affected so many lives and you have to
I gotta tell you, you're saying sort of what Tom said, and I disagree. And by the way, things don't have to be world hunger to debate them, so there certainly isn't. But I love debating this, because you're saying what Tom said, and I don't buy it. I'll tell you why. there's some other person as big as him in the area, like we talked about on the show. If somebody, you know, the Beatles, Paul McCartney, you could say, you know, or is big enough where we can throw it in there. You know, we're not comparing it. And who is not out of touch with coming off on a, if disingenuous was on a scale from 1 to 100, 1, you're a little disingenuous, 2, 100, it's 100% disingenuous. It's like, so if the truth was, yeah, you know what, you're right, you can't be that big and be in touch a little bit with reality or what comes off phony or what comes, then I would say, okay, but it's not that. I wish it was that, but I'd love to know, like,
do you remember when he on the wig and the little soul patch and was Chris Gaines?
Yeah, and he wanted to, he was disillusioned there for a while, but he thought that he was going to get away with coming out as a rock star called Chris Gaines, and nobody was going to know that it was Garth Brooks. Like, the record company wasn't going to immediately say, hey, Chris Gaines is Garth Brooks, buy this record. You know, I mean, he thought...
In defense of him, believe it or not, I can't believe I'm going to do it. This is pretty sad anyway. I think, and maybe I'm wrong, so you tell me. I'll tell you what I think. And I, didn't he really think, no, okay, they're going to know it's Garth Brooks, but they will accept him as this new character or this new person?
Well,
there's no way he thought.
I think he did. I think the way that they were trying to roll it out, or he was trying to roll it out, and, you know, the record company obviously disagreed, was that he was going to put out this anonymous CD and maybe this is where his ego comes into play, that he was going to be able to make a rock and roll song as a completely different person, and that he's so musically talented that no matter what he put out, it was going to become a superstar hit. Now, his follow-up to that was that he was going to make a movie as Chris Gaines, and that, I believe the story was, that's where he was going to reveal that Chris Gaines was Garth Brooks all along, if I remember the story correctly.
I'm going to say something kind of controversial here. The Chris Gaines album, not that bad.
It's not bad. It's not terrible.
It's a decent listen.
It's a product of its time. It belonged in the 90s where it stays.
But
I got to go. Is that when he did that? When did he do that?
I want to say it was probably 99.
Yeah, it's probably around then, yeah.
Hey, let me tell you something. Maybe I'm kidding a little, but not really. Maybe I'm not kidding at all. The state of mind that he's in now to make that video, if I had kids and they were like, you know, 5 and 6, and he was like, happened to be like a cousin of mine, and he was going to watch them for the week while I went out of town, I wouldn't let him. There's a delusion there. Delusion does not make you safe to be the guardian of a young child. And I just, well, maybe he doesn't, he's that delusional. And by the way, sometimes I think, one night we were sitting around about a month ago talking about this, and I said, maybe I got a little out of hand. You know, not out of hand, but like exaggerated, and you're doing the show. So I rewatched it, thinking I'd go, oh, it's not that bad. And then I rewatched it, and I was like, no, it's that bad. It's that bad.
No, and
by the way, if some of your listeners, well, obviously they heard it already, because you rolled it in,
right,
and they don't think it's that bad, then I worry about them.
Well, I agree that it's bad, but I look at it like, I mean, like, you're a recognizable guy. I'm sure that you get recognized by people out there, and people come up to you and talk to you, right?
Yeah, but not anywhere near like
no,
that,
not not like Garth Brooks, of course. But I mean, like, when somebody comes up to you and talks to you, do you kind of like think in your head, you know, oh, this guy knows my act, this guy knows, you know, that I'm a comedian? Do you kind of like feel like you kind of have to be on a little bit?
No, I mean, you know, look, there's different levels. I always go out of my way to say this out of respect to someone that's like, you know, someone that can't walk through the airport. I get it. That's a different thing, and they can't talk to everybody. But I always think, You know, we don't have to name people. Everyone knows what I'm talking about. When you're like, you walk and you're like, wow, like you, Alec Baldwin or somebody, you know what I mean? Like,
right.
Somebody like that or whoever. I don't deal with it like that. That's a different thing. But for when people come up and talk to me, some days I can talk a little longer, but I just take every situation differently. If I'm sitting at the airport and I'm bored out of my mind and somebody, you know, in a very quick period proves they're, enjoyable to talk to, sometimes I'll talk to people for 30 seconds, sometimes I'll talk to people for 10 minutes. So it's just like, take every situation, but some people are enjoyable to talk to. You're enjoying the conversation. So.
But how does it feel, Todd, though? I mean, you're one among them, obviously. the people that I feel very familiar with. Like, if I ran into you, you know, obviously you have no idea who I am, but I feel like I have a strong connection to you. I listen to your podcast, I watch your stand-up, I read your book. I know a lot about you, as if we were friends for, you know, 5+ years. Like, how awkward is that when somebody comes up to you and, you know, talks to you like you're a friend and you have no clue who that person is? I mean, that's got to, I don't know, does that put pressure on you?
Well, like, again, it's not like I deal with it at that other level, but at the level I deal with it, it can also work to your advantage, too. So, at least, hey, look, this I'm very opinionated, but what I'm saying now is just for me. It's not for everybody else. Some people, some other person's a little shy or off stage, and it's not that they're jerks at all. They're just really shy, or maybe they're to themselves, or and each person has to do what they want. But, like, you know, I like it sometimes because it helps you meet people. Like, if you're at a bar and you're in the mood to hang out and people just saw your show, you're, like, instantly best friends. So sometimes it works to your advantage to have them feel like they know you. And it's fun to make new friends sometimes, you know. I have friends, like, you know, when I go to, like, Minneapolis or something like that, there's, like, a guy and his girlfriend that came up to me after the show. And you know what? They really respect the boundaries of our friendship. Sometimes once a year they'll give me a call, how you doing? Sometimes we'll just see each other. We're, like, best friends when I'm in Minneapolis, and we'll go out. Almost every night that I'm there, they'll come to the show, we'll hang out afterwards, and I enjoy that friendship. If they were coming to LA, yeah, I might see them, I might not, but so there's all, so I enjoy it. I you know, it can work good, and if somebody ever oversteps the boundaries of, you know, you just deal with that individual person, but overwhelmingly, people are great. You know, the other thing is, and maybe I am going to compliment myself here for a second.
Please do.
But when you don't, I always say this expression. I have most of my life, I'm insecure. If I have a moment of confidence, I don't think that makes me a bad person. But over the years, whenever there were guys, like, whether they're podcast guys or radio guys or stand-up guys, and what I like to call dumb acts, where they draw that audience that agrees with them, and that audience that agrees with them, it's not a compassionate audience because they're not compassionate, and they're not. So, you know, most people that I would think would like my comedy were kind and decent and loving, and I don't know how, because I feel I am, and I feel I try to defend the people in my act that need defending. Like I said, I don't want to be a comedian that is bullying the people that need a hug.
Sure.
You know, you should. I don't give a fuck about offending people. I just want, like I've said a million times, I want to hope that I offend the right people, not the people that are already getting picked on, and then I go on top of it. So I would like to believe that because of my act or what I say when I'm on podcasts, that the people that come up to me are sweet and kind. And so, you know, they're not, that's why I say maybe because of what I do, overwhelmingly, 99% of the time people are awesome. And once in a blue moon, you get someone and you just deal with them.
So you just try to project that personality that you want to attract, essentially.
Right, right. Because I know a lot of radio guys, they don't even know, like, when they don't even know they're saying this, but, like, not all radio guys. Some radio guys, they don't say this at all. But over the years, even the last 20, you'll hear someone go, oh, we did a live remote. Our audience is so, you know, that doesn't have anything to do with what you do.
Well, that makes complete sense because I know the people that I gravitate towards, you know, if I listen to a podcast or a show and I'm completely against what they do, I don't continue to listen and then seek out their show so I can tell them how horrible of a person they are. I always do stick with the ones, I guess, that I associate my personality with more. So I guess that can make complete sense.
Yeah, so it doesn't mean, like, you know, if I had a sitcom that was on NBC, and that would be a different type, like I keep saying, because, you know, then you have, with the amount of people that might come up to me and what I do, I feel for now I reap the benefits of it a lot. If you're at a restaurant or somebody maybe recognizes you or something, and then they're a little kinder to you, so it's got its pluses too. I don't want to look like you know, I'm being so modest. The truth is, I walked around the mall 7 hours today to one person recognize me. So I'm sure I'm like, I'm not leaving till someone recognizes me.
And as soon as they did, you were out.
Then I acted like, all right, I don't have all day.
You wear a T-shirt with, like, your album cover on it,
carrying a copy of your book.
Play, a copy of my book wearing the same exact clothes that I'm wearing in the book.
So this week on the show, on the Todd Glass show on the Nerdist Network, right? That's Eddie Pepitone is on. Did you go and listen to a mariachi band and talk to Eddie Pepitone like right after I talked to you last night?
Wait a second. Why would you ask? Oh, because of the tweet?
That's on your Facebook, on the show's Facebook page. There's pictures of the mariachi band. And
let me tell you something. That I've done that at my house where I hired a mariachi band and then you tell them when you're there, like you on the phone, you're very specific. You go, when you have the outfit on and the hat and the jacket, you three are ready, instrument in hand, text me. And then I'll give you the lead. And you have all your friends hanging out in the house, and all of a sudden I'll just say something like, I wish we had a mariachi. And then they shoot in, and people freak out, because all of a sudden it is such a large presence when a guitar, two trumpets come in the room, they're singing. It's like, what the fuck just happened? But I've never had it done to me. So on the podcast last night, or Tuesday night, Steve Fine Arts, and then Jake on the show planned it. And out of nowhere, a mariachi band just comes into the studio. And I was like, are you kidding me? It was overwhelming. It was like my face was going to explode from joy. I was already having fun. We were, smoking a little bit. And then these three guys come in, and then there's also like a 9-year-old kid singing too. And it was beautiful. The kid was adorable. They were great. It was overwhelming.
How do you even go about hiring a mariachi band? Like, are they in the yellow pages?
You know what? They probably are, but these days just, Google it and they're just these guys either play it at what they did for us, or I'm sure they play at restaurants, and they're available for all types,
like mariachi bands,
situations.
Like on Yelp.
Could you imagine? Yeah. Do that with like a mariachi band would be great. Could you imagine doing it with like a polka band, like an 8-piece polka band where they all come out with tubas and trumpets?
Hey,
and everything.
I did that once with an accordion, and there was I think a trumpet, accordion, a guitar, and they did polka music, and they just came in, and it was the same thing. It's like it just comes from out of nowhere. You can probably get anybody to show up at your house. And you know what I wanted to do, which I thought would be really funny, was I have this running joke at my house. Like, I'm having a party. I don't know why. I always do it. It's like 1 a.m, and I'll go, ah, shit. I turn to everybody, and I go, ah, shit, my parents are here. Or home. My parents are home. Like, I live with my parents. I go, ah, shit. Shit, everybody, my parents are home. Shit. And Rory Scovel said I should do this, and I'm going to do it. And you could do this in a heartbeat. Get two actors, there's actors that would hire, like 70-year-old actors, a woman and a man, and then when you say that, they come in the house, like, with luggage. Like, Todd, we left you here, and... they yell at me. They're like, what is wrong with you?
We said no parties.
This place is filthy.
We said no parties. And they go in the room, and my mom shuts the door, and she's mad. Now look at your mother. She's all upset. And like I said, my friends, if that ever happens, because they know I say that all the time, but they would not expect that I hired two actors to come in and play my parents. You know, it would be funnier if I had my parents be like 40 years old.
And I was going to say, you should make them younger, and yeah. Like your adoptive parents.
Yeah. Shit, my parents are here. They're like 32. I'm like, God, they seem younger than you. That's a little weird.
You were adopted by people when... No, that doesn't work.
No,
I guess that could happen.
It's still fun.
Well...
So listen to the Todd Glass show on the Nerdist Network, and you'll hear a mariachi surprise this coming week.
But yeah, I guess we just ruined the surprise.
Just text. Probably will be like 10 minutes late. So, guys, I can give you a little bit more. I mean, I'm just sitting on my sofa here. It's up to you.
Okay, then I have one last question, Todd Glass. One final. This is a biggie. When Jesus Christ comes down from heaven, do you think that he will offer you a fist bump or a snarky, I'll call you later, and then disappear with a different posse?
Well, if there is a Jesus that's going to come down, I would say a fist bump. I think I've been pretty good while I was here.
You seem like a good. You seem like you're trying to spread joy with mariachi bands and parents coming home. I like it.
I'm trying.
Good egg.
I'm trying.
Todd Glass.
I still steal hotel towels, but other than that, I'm pretty good.
I think they expect you to.
They build that into the budget.
Well, that's what I said. I wish they would do at Whole Foods. Just weigh us when we come in and weigh us when we leave and let us eat what we want.
You know, you can steal the towels from the pool. That's what I always learn.
They're always so small, though. They're like half the size of an actual hotel towel.
Yeah. Thank you. You can't steal the pool towels, right? They're not good. You got to get like a good, you know, a good hotel towel. Like, you know, you can't steal it from, you know, shitty towels. You got to get like the Four Season towels.
The embroidered towels.
You probably spend a lot of time in hotels. Do you always steal the towels?
I do. No, I actually really don't anymore, but I used to all the time. But I love hotels. I love the, I think it's a sense of calm to me. I mean, my house is very, very organized, but there's something about being in, like, especially the higher up hotel, there's just a sense of order to the room, even a little more. And, like, I don't want to say clean because I'm very clean in my house, but it's like you're at the Ritz-Carlton. It's just something about those rooms, and everything is perfect, and everything has its place, and every corner is painted, and the molding is high gloss, and everything. And I feel very calm in a hotel. Like, when I wake up, I feel very organized and very centered, and I really try to get my house to be more like a hotel. I'm always simplifying my house and trying to, when I come home from a nice hotel on the road, I'm always constantly trying to, like, because not a lot, not too busy, not a lot of chaos, just, like, clean, not a lot going on. And so I spend a lot of time in hotels, but I very much enjoy it.
You know, in your house, do you have a bunch of, like, really unoffensive, generic pictures of sailboats?
I did. I have, you know what's so funny is that I used to take pictures of pictures when I was in a city because I wanted to show my friends where I was at, but, you know, and they never knew. They never knew. Like, I would take a picture. There was never a reflection. I never got caught. Now, everyone was like, wow, no one ever said anything. Until I think I sent the person I was in a relationship with a picture, not realizing it was black and white of the university on campus. And he goes, you took a picture of the picture. I go, how did you know? He goes, it's black and white, moron.
That's an Instagram filter.
I want it. You know what? It was like 7-8 years ago, so there weren't as many techniques on the phone like that when you would be able to. So I like just go, oh, you got me. Just how many of the others? How many of the others were like that? I go, pretty much all. Why would it have to be a fist pump? What, a handshake?
I don't know. You'd be a high five if you. Yeah,
I feel that's kind of informal for, you know, the son of God.
Yeah, but do you think he's really going to expunge a lot of, you know, formal? I think it's going to be more formal.
What's he going to do? Get booties? He's Jesus.
No, he's going to come by. He's going to fist bump you. He's going to be like, hey, you're all right. And he's going to move on to the next. He's got a lot of people to get to. You know, he doesn't have time.
You guys really don't believe this, do you?
No.
No, of course not.
No, that's good. Hey, you know what, kids? I always say younger people get smarter and smarter. Even though older people don't want to believe that, but we were talking about this yesterday. It's just factually true. You can argue that this group of younger people might not be right. Yeah, it's still up for debate, but you can argue that in the 50s and the 60s, whatever the masses of brilliant young people were fighting for, they always end up being right. Always. Every time. Whatever they're fighting for, they end up being right. So if you just want to put some statistics together of the past, they're right now. Their kids are right, whatever they're thinking. And the younger generation has come along, the traditional sense of religion and God, they believe in it less and less and less. So if you want to use that, they're probably right about this too, you know? Obviously not talking about being spiritual and all that. Who would deny that?
Sure.
You know, to go inward and pray that you're going to be more patient with people. That, of course, no one defined that. But traditional, all that stuff and the gates and
I hesitate to denounce all of it just because, like, I feel like, you know, what if it is true? But I don't believe it.
But, you know, I thought about that. I have an answer for that. if it is true, and there is a God and there's the gates, I really did think about this. I'm not 100% positive.
Right.
But, you know, we put people, you know, if somebody, you know, if somebody murdered someone in your family, you hope that the I can't say that word, the jury, understands it's reasonable doubt. That's why they put the word reasonable in there, because there's always doubt.
Yeah, yeah.
That word reasonable is in there for a reason, because then no one will go to jail. Because I don't think everyone's always like a half a percent, maybe, you know. But, in a lot of situations. So I think the thing is that there is the traditional sense of gates and this place where we go. Reasonably, no, I'm pretty sure there isn't. But I did think, what if I'm wrong? And I thought, this I'm positive about. I'm not positive that there isn't all that stuff, but I'm 100% positive there is a God, and he's the God we all claim he is, open-minded, brilliant, decent, kind, loving. I picture this. And there's the gates. Everything they see, you know, even the gates, some people say are figurative, some people think they really exist. And then I picture God's there, and I didn't believe he existed, and I picture for some reason a couple, a husband and a wife, go, hey, God, he didn't believe in you. He didn't believe in you. Don't let him in. He didn't believe in you. And he turns to them. He's even a little annoyed. He goes, excuse me, please don't, like, make me out to be a moron. He did good things that I believed in. I don't really care that he didn't do it in the name of me.
Right.
Get away.
He didn't need the scary repercussions to just live a moral, decent life.
And if some people did, and that's what gave them morals, that's fine. I'm not defying that.
Right.
But I really do. I picture this God going, no, I don't care. What am I going to do? Hey, this guy was kind. Picture the monster that they're explaining. This guy was kind. He was loving. He was decent. What type of God goes, but he didn't do it for me. I don't want to hang out with him. No, if God's everything they said, they're like, I don't care if he didn't believe in me. He still did everything I believe in. Come on in. I want to hang with you. That I'm positive about. And if I'm wrong about that, if he is a God that would go, you did everything I believe in. You tried to be decent like me, kind, loving, and caring, and nurturing. But you didn't do it in the name of me. I don't want to fucking be with that guy.
Right. Fuck that guy.
Yeah, fuck that guy. So if he is there and he's everything and is brilliant and decent, as kind and loving as everybody says he is, and that could happen, I still think I'll be okay. So I think I have it all covered up. We'll take a break. We'll be right back. Comedian Todd Glass is on the phone with us. He has a new book out. All right, guys.
Todd, thanks a lot, man. Thanks for doing this.
Todd Glass Situation, available in paperback now, I believe.
Yes, and could you do me a favor? I want you to edit out the part when we talked about God. Also edit out the part about the fist bump.
Can we
take away the part about when I talked about my significant other? Also take away the part when we talked about everything else is fine.
Yeah, let's get rid of the Garth Brooks thing so you can do a follow-up.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
You can do a follow-up on your show then, too.
Yes, thank you. But you can leave in the part where we talked about playing phone tag in the beginning.
Perfect.
Yeah,
perfect.
And the book title, Snafu. Yeah, we'll leave that.
Yeah, take that out, too. Take that out.
Yeah, we can't talk about the publisher, for sure.
Right.
Yeah. I don't want to make fun of them. So all right, we got enough there.
I hope everybody enjoyed our 1.5-minute interview with
Todd
Glass.
Said hi and thank you.
All right, guys. Well, good talking to you, and have a nice day.
Thanks, Todd.
Go fuck yourself. Thanks a lot.
Hello, welcome back to the Wheelbarrow Full of Dicks Internet Radio Program. Thanks again to Todd Glass for being on the show.
What a good guy, right?
I know.
What a nice fucking guy.
Hell of a guy. We enjoyed talking to him very much. We are joined by Drunkard STL on the Twitters.
Hey.
It's countdown to the end of Drunk. Mm. We figure we might as well say goodbye. And then if he comes back, bonus.
Mike, it's never goodbye. It's see you later.
Good journey.
Drunk. We'll see you later.
Yeah.
Yeah. We.
Well, I did think I was still gonna do the call thing, right?
Oh yeah, but I mean, we know how these things work, Drunk. We've been here before. You know, you have people, and they say.
Did you ask the other guys to do a call?
They say, like, you know, oh yeah, no, it's just temporary, man. You know, our work schedule changed, and they just never come back. Yeah, so we want to say goodbye, right?
This is a highway we've been down several times.
Yeah. We're not new to this, Trump. We know how these things work. Yeah. I mean, one day, me and Napier are going to be sitting here after the show, and Travis is going to be drinking. He's going to say, guys, you know, I'm having another kid, and my work schedule's changed.
Don't fucking say that to me.
And, you know, I'm not going to be able to do the show for a while, at least until, you know, such and such. And we'll be like, all right, bye, Travis. We'll see you again never. And then eventually it'll just be me and Napier sitting here playing footsie under the table.
Sword fighting.
Waiting.
So wrangling dong.
This is a bad time to tell you then that Todd Glass just called me and said that he wanted me to join his program on a regular basis.
Oh, yeah, really?
Well, guys, I do want to do a Hollywood Fantasy League update because it's really heating up. It's getting exciting. Chappie finished this past weekend. It made $23 million.
Big money.
It had a 41% Metacritic. So Chappie earned the Furnacast 9 points. So the Furnacast is done. The Furnacast will finish in second place for sure. Our three movies have already beaten the Furnacast's four movies. So what it's going to come down to is the fucking wheelbarrow full of dicks versus the Lotus Cast in a epic finale. Cinderella did open this past weekend. It had a 66% Metacritic, made $68 million. Big opening for the first weekend.
Pretty decent.
Yeah, Cinderella already has 45 points. We still have Insurgent coming out, and Cinderella still has another week. Now, we are spotted 4 points. The way the Hollywood Fantasy League works is it is your Metacritic multiplied by your box office for the first weekend, first full week, and then second weekend. We tabulate the scores on the Monday after the second weekend.
And we got to remember, too, in our favor, I believe that these YA adaptions typically do better in their second movie than they do in their first.
Is that true?
Yeah. I know Twilight didn't take off until, like, the second movie. And I think The Hunger Games, too. I think the box office blew up bigger. Maybe not the Metacritic, but the box office gets bigger with every movie.
Okay, well, that's good to know. Because we're already spotted 4 points, but we do need a big showing from Insurgent if it's going to catch Cinderella. Because it looks like Cinderella's in pretty good shape right now. But what I really want to talk about, guys, I had a thought the other day. And I know that you guys like to shit on my ideas, but I think this is something that I don't know why this hasn't been invented yet.
Oh, Mike, my anus is ready.
Is it?
Yeah.
I was thinking about...
Let's get the Googler ready.
Like a life class. Like a thing that prepare. I mean, because you go through school, and there's things that you just don't learn about that you need to know.
You mean all the stuff that your parents should have taught you?
Right. I mean, let's say your parents either didn't or they... I mean, there's many people that, you know, are in single-parent households. There's a lot of situations out there where people don't learn to do this stuff. And it's stuff that you probably should know.
Like balance a checkbook and those kind of things?
Balance a checkbook. I was thinking, like, life class one would be things like change a flat tire. Like, learn how to, like, do your taxes right. Maybe, like, cook a couple of meals. Like, a couple of basic meals.
If you really want to do it, though, Mike, I think you got to go back a little bit more. I remember when I used to deliver off the side of a truck to gas stations, I would actually run into gals who obviously were 19, 20 years old that didn't know how to put air in their tires. So I think, you know, take it all the way back to that instead of just changing a tire. You know, make it real basic.
But yes, Mike, they already have those.
Like build a fire. Like things like that. I mean, as Boy Scouts, right? But I wasn't a Boy Scout. But then like life class too, like, you know, you learn to like jump a car. You learn basic CPR stuff. Like that's something that people should know. There should be more people that know how to do CPR.
Like kick them in the chest.
Over a ravine?
No, like jump the battery.
Yeah, jump a car like the Dukes of Hazzard, Travis. you know, like some organizational skills, like some tips on that. Maybe like really basic plumbing, like, you know, how to like change out the insides of a toilet, stuff like that. And then like life class 3, like learn how to like change your own oil. And like maybe some light electrical work, like changing out
outlets
and light fixtures and things like that. Maybe do like an introduction to like the stock market or something like that. Things like basic things that seem like people should just know it, but that maybe they don't. Just have life classes.
So you're talking about like a Tony Robbins, but just for general, like not how to make
not for like motivation, better. But like right. for like, you know, how to like do how to... things that you need to do in life.
Like how to get through life on a day-to-day basis.
So what you mean is community college.
Yeah, but the community college has like specific things that is more structured towards like either regular college or high school, like math and social studies and things like that. What I'm talking about is like life classes, like not necessarily like things that you study to advance your career, but things that you should just know to like be a homeowner or a
right
a person.
Like this is this it's like if you wanted to take a cooking class or a pottery class just for your free time or a foreign language as an adult just to learn it, you want to do one that's just basic life skills,
right? And it wouldn't even necessarily be at a community college. Have it like a church on like a Wednesday night or something,
or Mike's house.
Did you happen to Google life skills class?
No.
Because I bet you there's a billion of them.
I guarantee you that if there is a life skills class, it is held at a church, and it is probably has a lot to do with Jesus.
No, that's a Jesus class.
But don't you think that this is something that like you could very easily market and get out there? There's probably plenty of people that have no idea how to change a tire or do basic CPR or things like that. And just, like, people would volunteer them for them. Like, you know, say, you need to take this goddamn life skills class.
There's one. Introduction.
Students with moderate to severe disabilities. Fuck you, drunk. Just start clicking on Google shit and think you have what I'm talking about.
No, I think this is a good idea because if you market it towards early 20-somethings who are just going out on their own, and like you said, maybe they had single parents, maybe they had just a mom and they didn't learn dude stuff as a, you know, as a guy.
But I mean, my dad never took me out and showed me how to change a flat tire. He never had that conversation.
Life skills 101, a curriculum for food, finance, and other real-world basics.
I mean, that's never something that I did. I don't know how to fix anything. And that's because my dad didn't know how to fix anything because his dad never taught him to fix anything. My dad just paid somebody to come fix shit.
Oh,
but
dude,
I don't.
This is like a fucking 12-week program, dude.
Make it like a 10-week thing. Like each week you have like a specified like topic and you pay $100 for 10 weeks.
And if you don't like the topic, you skip out on that week, although you don't get your money back.
Right. No, you pay for life class 1. You get 10 weeks worth of things. You'll get the list, but, you know, and if you want to take life class 2 without taking life class 1, you have to test out of life class 1 to be able to take life class 2.
Absolutely. Demonstrate that flat tire changing.
You show me you know how to change a goddamn tire, and I'll let you take life class 2 without taking life class 1, motherfucker.
And that the in life class 2, they teach you how to change a serpentine belt or something,
right?
So like, or would that be 3? Maybe that's too advanced.
But don't you think more people should take a CPR class and learn how to do all that stuff? And I guess you just take a CPR class, all right?
Well, if I take a CPR class, what's that going to do for me? I can't give myself CPR, so why do
yeah,
I give
can.
A shit? You can.
Yeah,
what if
chair.
One of your loved ones is choking, Napier? What if one of your loved
you
ones...
You use the Heimlich for choking, not CPR.
Yeah.
Eh. Semantics.
Isn't that is semantics? Is them shitting on my idea.
Mike, what you do is, when they're choking, you look at them right in the eye and say, "The wheat will separate from the chaff." And then you just start staring and giggling.
I think it's a great idea, Mike. I think to look too specifically at the examples that you're giving, it's easy to pick it apart. But I think in general, you got yourself $1 million empire right there.
Right, right.
I have a feeling.
I mean, like each week you get like a an expert. I mean, like, you know, I'll organize the class, but I don't know how to do any of these things, so I'll have to get somebody who's like really good at changing tires to come and instruct.
So, like your dad, you're just going to pay people to do it for you.
Right.
So that was a life skill.
Not with my money.
With their money.
Because I don't have no money. I'm going to take people's money, and I'm going to use that money to pay an expert to come teach everybody how to do things.
Well, and the more
I'm
going
to take a little bit for myself, because it's my idea. And
so what your dad did was give you a valuable life skill on how to pick people to do your work for you.
Right.
So
I'm not complaining about my upbringing.
No, but I mean, why learn all of those menial bullshit tasks that you'll have to do once or twice, you know, in your lifetime when you can just pay some idiot $50 and he'll do it for you?
People are on Napier. People are on a budget.
I'm on a budget, Napier.
You know what I mean? You want to save that $50 once in a while.
I mean, like, you know.
Nope. One thing breaks in my house, I burn down the house.
If I'm on the side of the road and I have a spare in my trunk.
Yeah.
And I got a flat tire. Am I going to call some dude to come do it for me?
Motorist Assist from Missouri, I think, is free. They just show up.
Or am I just going to do? Am I going to take the bull by the horn and do it myself?
Well, when AAA. You think about it, because if you call somebody to come and do something for you on the side of the road, it's at least $50, but most likely it's like $75, $80.
That's what I'm saying, Drunk.
Depending on where you price this,
you know,
class,
how to change your own tire.
I've witnessed somebody change my tire once. I called my friend Chris. He came out and changed my tire for me. I don't know how to change a tire. I have no idea. I have the basic concept. I got the jack in my trunk, and you put the jack somewhere.
Yep.
But you got to put it a specific somewhere,
yep.
Or else you fuck up shit.
Kind of, yes.
And so I'm thinking to myself, probably going to put that where I'm going to fuck up my shit.
Sure.
Because I don't know where the fuck to put it.
Okay.
So then you jack that shit up, and you take off the lug nuts.
Oh, you want to loosen those before you jack that shit up.
Yep.
So you're already fucked up. Yep. You need to take a class.
Yep.
Get that class.
Good thing about me organizing the class...
Hey, Mike.
Is I get to see it.
You get to learn.
For myself.
When
yeah.
When you jump a car, red end or black end first?
You do the red end first. Is the
I
other
do.
Way? See, right now as it stands, my method of jump starting my car is call some dude who knows how to jump start a car.
Hey, Bill, over there in the parking lot, do you have jumper cables? Cool.
Right.
Can you jump start my car? I'll be over here.
There's been times in my life that people have asked me, hey, Mike, can you jump start my car for me? And my car won't start. And how I jump start somebody's car is I pull up by their car and open my hood and then stand there while they jump start their car. I don't know how to jump start a car, Napier. I have no fucking idea how to do it. But it's happened many times in my life where that situation has come up. Where I used to work, people used to ask me for jumps all the time. And you know what I'd tell them? Oh, my car doesn't have those.
So, Mike...
I lied. I lied.
Wait. You said your car doesn't have what?
The posts.
Wait.
They knew I was lying, Travis. I knew I was lying. They knew I was lying. But you know what?
My car doesn't have a battery.
I was about to say, I did own one car that didn't have one post. So, I mean, it's not out of the realm of possibility for you to not have them.
My car had the post. But they didn't. Maybe they believe me. I was bullshit. But what do they know? I'm telling you, though. This is going to be huge. This is going to be our big break. We're going to quit the podcast. We're going to teach life classes.
Is day one how to clean Willy water off your pecker?
How to properly clean your butthole?
Yeah. How to properly wipe your anus?
Yeah. Like you know.
Maybe a girl has, like, improper wiping technique, and she's just shoving feces in her vag. She's just rubbing that shit all over her lips. She doesn't understand what's going on, why her panty fronts are all skidded.
I mean, there's so many things that, like, seem basic to some, but other people have no clue.
about what it is or how to do it.
Yeah, some people aren't burdened with the particulars of life.
Right, but maybe they should be. Maybe we would be a better world if more people took my life classes.
I like this idea. Before I purchased a home, I had no idea how to do anything in regards to home ownership, you know, maintaining anything. And until I was forced to do it and learn on my own, I just didn't know. So I think that this class would be invaluable to, especially to this generation now that has no idea how to do anything. I think this is the perfect time for it.
In order to keep my garage safe, I'm going to store whole bunches of gasoline cans, dirty oily rags, and several books of Strike Anywhere matches.
And make sure to put it all by a window so the sun can beat down on it.
Right next to the baby's crib.
That's in the garage.
That's in the garage.
Drunk can teach one of the classes.
Oh, it's little tipsy that don't walk too good.
Because Drunk,
hey, where's that baby of yours? Oh,
was an Eagle Scout.
I was an Eagle Scout.
Drunk was an Eagle Scout. Drunk can teach us things about life.
Hey, Drunk, did you get a letter from the President of the United States?
I did.
Well, which president did you get it from?
At that time, it was George Bush. George W. Bush.
George W. Bush? Yes. Do you still have that?
I do.
Fantastic.
I got one from Buzz Aldrin, Neil Armstrong, a bunch of congressmen.
You got a whole bunch of letters?
Oh, yeah.
Shit. Or like a whole bunch of people signed the one letter?
Being an Eagle Scout's a huge deal. Like, yeah. My kid became an Eagle Scout, and he got the same thing. He got an Obama letter, he got a governor letter, he got a mayor letter, all mm-hmm. sorts of them.
Yep.
Congratulating you?
Yep.
Was it a stamp, or was it like an actual pen and ink signature?
No, pen and ink signature, yeah.
I'll be damned.
Some more can personalized than others? No, because, I mean, it's personalized to me, almost every single one of them.
Did it say, Dear Drunk?
Oh, no.
You could just black it out and say redacted.
But I had the American flag flown over the Capitol one day, and then they sent it to me.
Wow. So Drunk is teaching life skills class. I can probably get him at a discount. He ain't got nothing going on.
I should have stayed in. I left because there were too many peckers flying around. I didn't appreciate that.
All right. So, anyway...
So, Travis,
yeah.
The other big story this week that we were going to talk about is the hashtag change the cover movement.
The Batgirl cover. Like this, I think next month, DC Comics is putting Joker variant covers on every single comic book where, regardless of the story, the Joker's going to be on the cover. And I actually just saw this morning. There's a cover that seems to have blown up and caused the internet to get into the tizzy that it likes to get into about any possible thing that I can grasp onto, and they can all gather together to be angry about something, where it's kind of an homage to the Killing Joke, where the Joker paralyzed Barbara Gordon when she was Batgirl, so she became Oracle, shot her in the spine, whatever. So it's kind of an homage to that cover where he's standing behind her, and he has painted a Joker smile on her face, which looks like it could probably be blood. And he's holding a gun over her shoulder, and she's crying and terrified. So the entire internet decided to blow up and freak out about how misogynistic it was and how it doesn't show her in an empowered state.
She looks scared.
She looks fucking terrified.
There's a tear coming from her eye. And
she's... very wide-eyed and scared shitless.
And you know what? She should be.
It's the fucking Joker.
It's the fucking Joker.
He's a homicidal maniac who beat the second Robin to death with a fucking crowbar.
Right.
To death with a crowbar as he laughed hysterically about it.
And
now
and,
she's probably by him. He's got a gun over her shoulder. And I don't know where the blood came from, but she's fucking terrified because it's the Joker.
And so, I mean, the message is that they feel it is misogynistic to depict Batgirl looking scared.
Yeah, exactly. And listen, I could get behind the whole movement if the Joker had ripped off her clothes or something. You know what I mean?
Right, yeah.
Like, if she was, like, in, like, her
if, like, the Joker was raping her on the cover.
Right. Like, if he was standing behind her and her costume had been torn asunder and it revealed her breasts in just like a superhero bra, and she was scared shitless like that. But she is fully costumed. There is every bit of that brand new costume that they put on, which is like a leather jacket now, so it's not revealing at all. She's just a fucking scared shitless gal who is supposed to be painted as like a 19-year-old girl.
Right.
With this like 30-year-old dude who's a fucking mass murderer.
Yeah, I think the message should be that the Joker is scary more than Batgirl's a pansy. You know,
the Joker's fucking scary. But it's like, this has happened a bunch of times. I think the internet grasped at things. They did this like a couple of months ago when a new Spider-Woman comic book came out, and the number one had a variant cover by an artist called, his name is Milo Manara, and he had depicted Spider-Woman crawling over the edge of a building in this, like, it wasn't even a seductive pose. She was kind of, like, on all fours.
You mean the normal Spider-Man pose?
Exactly. The one that Spider-Man has been in a million times. But her ass is up in the air in this one. Granted, she is fully clothed, but the internet blew up and said, you need to take this off the market. This can't happen. And Marvel essentially said, fuck you. Well, I just, as we were doing this, when we were doing the interview, well, when we were playing the interview, I looked on Twitter really quick, and apparently DC Comics has already pulled this Batgirl Joker cover because they're afraid of the backlash.
Are you
fucking
kidding me?
Pussies?
No, I'm dead fucking serious.
The cover is, it's striking, it's powerful. It's very powerful. It's a good cover. I mean, like, you think of, like, you know, iconic covers and what the purpose of them is. It's to draw you in. It's so that you see, like, artwork that catches you and you're curious about what's inside. And I think it does that.
I would, if I didn't know anything about Batgirl and I was buying only Marvel comics and I walked by the comic book shelves and I saw that cover, I would grab it. Just because that cover is so amazing. It's so cool looking.
You know, I've grown up with Japanese anime my whole life, and I've read Japanese comics. The Joker's hand isn't even inside her. When I hear people bitching about this fucking cover, he's not even in her. Like, not even a little bit.
He's got his finger on her cheek and a gun over her shoulder in his hand.
Like, it's implied,
his tits, not her tits, not even in his hand.
It's implied that she's scared.
No, right, shit.
I mean, that's it. It's implied that Batgirl, when encountered with the Joker, like probably one of the biggest villains in the history of comic books, if not the biggest.
Mark Hamill played him.
Right. Well, the thing about it is, like, people are so used to, and I mean, it's so far beyond what people should be upset about, because the Joker has been, like, portrayed as this a bunch of times as this kind of, like, wacky, oh, we don't really understand him. He just likes to pull pranks. This dude is a fucking mass murderer. He kills and he fucking, like, tries to turn everybody on a whim to turn against each other. If anybody would have read, like, covers aside, if you would have read the Batman storyline, Death of the Family, a handful of months ago, he had all of, like, Batman's sidekicks and shit tied up at a table, and he's, like, cutting off hands and shit. Like, dude is fucking a mass-murdering fucking psychopath
who is going to strike
that fear into a 19-year-old girl, regardless of how badass everybody thinks she is.
Right. It's just thing after thing, and people just cave, and nobody stands up for their art. Nobody stands up for their products. They all just fucking puss out.
Well,
at the first sign of adversity, they just tuck their dick between their legs and scurry backwards as quickly as they can.
If DC is going to cave in, that was actually a really good cover art. If they're going to cave in every time a bunch of whiny crybaby piss pants I'm not going to buy your comic off on Twitter. Why don't they just put up every issue that they're going to put out, put the fucking photos of it on Twitter, let the fans vote for the cover, and then they will put out only what they deem is the most popular.
Each week they'll put out a poll of like, hey, what direction do you want us to go with this story that would be the least offensive to you?
Well,
Exactly.
What's even funnier is that this isn't even the main cover. This is a variant cover. You have two choices. If you want to buy Batgirl 39 or 40 or whatever fucking issue this is, you don't have to buy this cover. DC gives you a choice. You can buy the regular cover without the fucking Joker on it. Move beyond it. Change the fucking channel. Don't listen to that goddamn song.
And you also have to wonder how many people that are jumping on this bandwagon and complaining about this that are actual monthly readers of the Batgirl comic book.
I guarantee you not a one. Not a single fucking one.
No way.
You know why? Because most people that read that kind of shit, that's expected. That's the kind of artwork that they're going for.
Who are you catering to then?
Oh, they're catering to just overall sentiment because these people, they might not buy that issue. They might not buy Batgirl. Maybe they buy Batman. Maybe they just go in once in a while, buy a collection of comics like every once in a while. The moment that they start alienating those people who kind of just casually walk into the comic book store, they might lose 2% of their business.
And they won't, because I'll tell you what, everybody who was offended by that actually does randomly walk into the comic store will buy a different DC thing. Because what they did earlier this week is they redesigned Wonder Woman's costume to make her more manly, to cover her up, because, you know, people might have been offended at the fact that Wonder Woman walked around with bare shoulders. So,
in this particular instance, don't you think they would be better served to put the cover out anyway?
Yes.
Despite the controversy.
Yes.
And all of the people that are on their side, which I check Twitter. A lot of people are. A lot of people think that these feminazis or whatever vernacular you want to use, a lot of these people
whiny
are out.
Whiny crybaby piss pants.
A lot of these people are out of line. I mean, like, I would be more inclined to track down that issue and buy it just because it's controversial and I want to support people who are trying to do
And that's what happened with that Milo Manera Spider-Woman variant. It was like a 1 in 25 or a 1 in 50 variant. I'm not sure exactly what the number was on it. But you can't touch that book for less than $120 now.
Right.
Are we just that desensitized? Have we just watched too many ultra-violent, you know, beating the shit out of women, out of dudes, animals, burning planets, that we just don't have any sense of?
You think that we're desensitized and that they might be right?
Yeah, are we wrong?
That's an interesting thought.
But the answer
is no. Everybody is the star of their own movie, so maybe, but I just find it very funny that there's that many people who are just like, there's no problem with it.
See, my whole issue is these people are not regular readers. Why does DC give two fucks? And if they're just going to paint by numbers anyway, then fucking go all out. Well, go hog wild.
If you really want to do this, you're going to go back to Silver Age comic books where Superman is saving a cat out of a tree, and the cover is Lois Lane shouting at Superman that, you know, maybe he flew too fast and a mailbox got knocked over.
But if you never incorporate any kind of adversity, if you never incorporate any kind of danger, anything that could happen, if you take the guessing out, then what's the point of telling these stories?
Well, essentially, when you take the stakes away, it's not entertaining anymore. When you cannot terrify a 19-year-old girl who dresses up like a bat and fights bad guys, when she's never terrified anymore, why do I give a fuck what she's doing? Because she's unstoppable. She has no feeling and can just do whatever she wants at any given time, and there's nobody that ever poses a threat.
I mean, some of the best covers that I can think of in the history of comic books are people shown in moments of weakness. I mean, if you think about, like, I mean, just coming to mind, like, that cover of, like, Daredevil, like, at Elektra's grave.
Right.
Or like, the cover of, like, Batman holding Robin right after he was killed.
Exactly. He's holding his dead body that the Joker beat to death with a crowbar.
Did you see that cover art of when Wolverine got his adamantium skeleton ripped out of him, and you see his claws, his iconic weapons just in his hand like dust? And he's screaming in the cover. It looks like something you would want to read.
But I mean, if all we're looking at is superheroes in their mightiest at all times, and they never have any kind of feeling or anything, they just run bravely into the night to fight whatever creature comes about, and they never have any kind of human emotion or feeling, then what the fuck are we even doing? Why would we even care?
I wouldn't care. And the funny thing to me about this whole thing is, like I said, going back to that Spider-Woman cover again, is that Marvel is owned by Disney. And Disney was like, you know what? Fuck y'all.
And you don't DC like it, don't buy it.
Right, don't buy it. You don't have to. It's not, you don't have to get this. And DC's owned by, like, Warner Brothers, like Time Warner, and they're like, nah, we don't want to offend anybody. And I kind of wonder, because DC has been, like, really struggling against Marvel the last couple of years because their books are just not that good. The only one that I even read anymore is, like, Core Batman, just because Scott Snyder and Greg Capullo do a bang-up job on it, and it's just really good. It's reinventing things. But everything else is just so fucking blah to me. Like, they tried to reinvent their brand, and it was just... it just failed. And I wonder if they're just so scared of losing any more market share that they will do whatever they think that the fans might possibly want.
I think it's about context, because if that cover was just, you know, kind of changed a little bit and it was for, you know, My Little Pony comic books, that would be completely inappropriate for My Little Pony comic books. And you know what? Joker putting his hand over her tit while the other one's, you know, forearm length upper asshole, that's inappropriate too for Batman.
Right.
That's perfectly fine, you know, for Asian teenage get fucked in the asshole, you know, whatever you want to call her, Super Sailor Moon, whatever new hentai is out.
Guys, we're joined by Beardy and the Beast. Hi, guys.
Hey, what's going on?
Are you there?
Wait, yeah, I'm here.
They are coming up next. What do you guys got going on?
Fisting?
We're going to be talking about sexual subcultures around the world.
Ooh. Are you going to talk about this Batgirl cover that we've just been ranting about?
No, we're not.
Matt, would you take my life class?
I would take your
life. You know all that stuff, though, right? You're a manly man.
You know what? Because we did have something like that in school.
You did?
Yeah, we did.
Is that a Utah thing?
It might be a West thing.
Huh. Yeah, I feel like I was cheated.
Well, in certain parts of the West, if you fuck up, you will freeze to death and die. Not so much.
So it's a little bit more important?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Beardy.
Yo.
Let's say you go 20 miles outside of the town that you're at, and you break down... just to make sure, say this was 20 years ago, no cell phones. How fucked are you? Middle of winter.
In the middle of winter?
Yeah. Your car just breaks down, no cell phone.
Not fucked at all.
Oh.
He's just fine.
I have like a emergency roadside kit, like in my car, blankets, stuff like that.
You just gotta get in the back and take a nap.
I have none of
those.
Until
somebody finds you.
Yeah.
I don't even have a scraper.
You don't have a scraper?
I got the brush, but if it's ice or something, I'm fucked.
What happened to the scraper?
Mike's the most unprepared individual.
I used a CD I didn't like that much last time.
Yeah, Melanie just said, too, that we have a almost lifetime supply of McDonald's chicken nuggets in between our seats.
I probably got some fries down there for sure.
Oh, I've seen them.
I mean, that's the great thing about having kids, is you'll always have food in your car.
And you got toys to play with, probably, too.
Oh, just toss out the chicken nuggets, like, into a field, wait till a little ground squirrel comes by, and then you break its little goddamn neck, and then you suck out the ground squirrel juice. And then you got fresh juice.
It is good.
All right, go on that note.
Yeah.
That's some Napier advice to close out the show.
That is some very... Napier advice.
Guys, I'm looking forward to all that you do.
Do you guys have anything on feet? Because Mike will appreciate the feet.
You're the wind beneath our wings. You are our spirit animals. I wish you all the best in all that you do. Sometimes I dream about you, Matt, at night.
Wow.
I dream that you're rubbing my feet and telling me that I'm pretty.
Matt made me go out and buy different scotches to try.
And then you choke me, right?
No, I'm not into that choking stuff. I'm a gentle lover. I'm all about tender kisses.
Ooh. Nice language.
I like...
Dirty kisses.
I like to cuddle after.
Ooh.
I'm gonna be honest with you. Sometimes I like to be the little spoon.
It's about the exact same thing.
It's weird, I know. I'm generally the big spoon, but every now and then it's nice to just be held.
I'm not allowed to be the little spoon anymore. I farted on her vag too many times and she got offended. See you in hell, Ratchet.
Bye.
Hey, it's Napier. Listen live every Monday at 9, 8 Central on RadioFubar.com. Download past episodes at WFODix.com, just in case you didn't get enough of this. Subscribe on iTunes or Stitcher. Follow us on Twitter @ WFODix. Follow Drunk @ DrunkardSTL or Travis @ProduceTravis. Get on Facebook.com and then type in WFODix. Email us at WFODshow@gmail.com. We're not going to listen to any of your suggestions, but we will accept praise and or titty pics. And if you're a fan of Mike, just send him feet. I mean, why do you give a shit? It's feet pics.
I like feet.
Yeah, he likes feet. Send him some feet pics. You don't give a shit. Send him some fucking feet pics. Blam!
You're listening to the Wheelbarrow Full of Dicks radio program. Great name, asshole. Okay, there's one. Hi, everybody. This is Todd Glass, and you're listening to WFOD. Hi, this is Todd Glass, and whenever I'm on the road, I listen. I don't want to say that. It sounds horrible. Hi, everybody. This is Todd Glass. You're listening to a Wheelbarrow Full of Dicks. That's the bumper you get, but I'm not saying it. It sounds a little too Marc Maron.